Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. If you go to MobiusStripPress.com, you can find out how you can download these podcasts and find our support documents and links. As I always say, a fundamental premise I work on is reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. So the point of this show, Reclaiming the Republic, is working on that middle part, equally informed. There's no doubt that we're dealing with federal tyranny, and there's a litany of appendages, as I pointed out before, from the IRS constraining speech, the BLM, EPA, energy, immigration, healthcare, housing. The litany goes on. It is a sundry of violations of a constitution. The real thing is that the problem isn't about abortion, welfare, immigration, and these sundries. These are the symptoms of the problem. And as I've said before, the real problem is noncompliance to the Constitution. Again, I've said that the Constitution is a contract, and to understand how to fix this problem, we have to know what we're going to fight. And our objective must be to kill the monster that's created these contractual violations. In doing this, we're going to use the founding documents. And the founding documents, as far as most academic scholars are concerned, the founding documents would be the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution Convention debates, the Northwest Ordinance, the ratification debates of each state, the Federalist Papers, the early debates in Congress, the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, and I even include the Madison veto bill and other statements as well from Madison and some of the framers in floor debates and speeches. Let me get right into the meat of this, and let's start off with the Federalist Papers. And the reason why I want to start off with the Federalist Papers for this show and the coming show segments is because the Federalist Papers is the detailed explanation from those who actually wrote the Constitution, Madison, Hamilton, and Jay. And these explanations are clearly delineating what the Constitution is and defining the limitations that were put within the Constitution. So the first Federalist Paper that I want to get into, and I just want to quote this, this is out of Federalist Paper number 14 by James Madison. In the first place, it is to be remembered that the general government is not to be charged with the whole power of making and administering laws. Its jurisdiction is limited to certain enumerated objects which concern all the members of the Republic, but which are not to be attained by the separate provisions of any. What Madison is saying is that the general government is not charged to be able to make all the laws that would be needed for the Republic. Its ability to make laws and its ability to govern is strictly limited by the enumerated powers within the Constitution. The next Federalist Paper that I want to go into is Federalist Paper number 42. And by the way, you can get these Federalist Papers and these little bullets that I have so that you can actually look these up on the Mobius Strip Press website. That's Mobius Strip Press, MobiusStripPress.com. On the homepage of the Mobius Strip Press, I have a presentation that I gave to the Constitution Association as the keynote speaker in September this year, or actually not September, I'm sorry, July 9th this year. And you can actually go in and pull in the entire presentation that I had and pay attention to the bullet review slides. And in these bullet review slides, I actually cite what Federalist Papers, so you can actually go and look at these little citations that I have and look at them in context to what they're saying, what Madison, Hamilton, and Jay are saying. The second Federalist Paper, as I was saying, is the Federalist Paper number 40 by James Madison. And this is regarding limited and defined government. And Madison states, "We have seen that in the new government, as in the old, the general powers are limited. So he's talking about the new government being this new constitution, as in the old Articles of Confederation. The general powers are limited, and that the states, in all unenumerated cases, are left in the enjoyment of their sovereign and independent jurisdictions. Clearly, he's stating that the states, in all unenumerated cases, in other words, if it is not listed in the Constitution, then the states have the enjoyment and their own sovereignty over regulating and governing their people. If the states feel it's necessary to have a health care program, that power was reserved to the states only. If the states feel necessary to have their own communications, whether they have their own transportation, whether they want to have their own energy programs, those things were left to the states because they were not listed and enumerated in the Constitution. So let's move on to the next Federalist paper, number 45 by James Madison. And this is a good one because the powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government are few and defined. Those which are to remain in the state governments are numerous and indefinite. The former, the federal government, will be exercised principally on the external objects as war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce, with which last the power of taxation will, for the most part, be connected. The powers reserved to the states will extend to all the objects which in the ordinary course of affairs concern the lives, liberties, and property of the people and the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the states. So clearly he's reiterating, as he's already said a few times, that the powers that were delegated in the Constitution to the general or federal government are few and defined. So this isn't just me saying this. This is James Madison. And let me check here. Oh, yeah, that's the guy that wrote the Constitution. So if anybody would know what those limitations were, it'd be this man, not our current president, not our future president, and not definitely the last few presidents. And again, the powers reserved to the several states will extend to all the objects which, in the ordinary course of affairs, concern the lives, liberty, and properties of the people and the internal order. So I'm just repeating that. It's just very clear there that the states have all the power in governing their people. If they want to create more government, they can. If they want to leave their people to be free and to be able to take care of themselves independently, they can do that as well. They don't have to interject, but only the states have the power to interject. The next Federalist paper, and this is an interesting one, is Federalist paper number 46. And this is dealing with encroachments and what I would consider the pathway to what James Madison asserts is the necessity of conventions. And again, Madison is speaking, and he says, "Were it admitted, however, that the federal government may feel an equal disposition with the state governments to extend its power beyond the due limits," those limits within the Constitution, "the latter," in other words, the states, "would have the advantage in the means of defeating such encroachments." So there's a few things you can garner from this. The latter, the states, would have the advantage. What is that advantage? The advantage is that the states are the principal stakeholders of the contract, and they can always call in the subordinate of the contract, which is the federal government, because the contract created the subordinate. The Constitution itself actually created and dictated precisely the boundaries that the federal government was supposed to function within. And so as the stakeholders of the contract, which is the states, because the states are the ones that created that federal government, and let's look at this in a relationship of child and parent. The parent in this relationship, and as I state this in my book, in the book I published in 2013, We the People, Whose Constitution Is It Anyway? I clearly delineated this as a parent and child relationship, that the parent are the states. The states are the parents of the federal government, and they're the overseers in making sure that they're supposed to stay within the boundaries. These aren't just words that I'm making up. I'm going to give you all sorts of references from Hamilton, Madison, Jefferson, Washington, Jay, and so forth, that what we're dealing with is the federal government is subordinate in all things to the states, except for those few things that were delegated to it by the Constitution. In other words, if it ain't in the Constitution, they shouldn't be doing it. And constitutionally, they're violating the law and the contract that the states have given them. So anyway, that was Federalist Paper number 46 that talks about the states having the advantage in dealing with these encroachments. And another one that points out these encroachments is James Madison again. It's the same one, Federalist Paper number 46. And he states, "But ambiguous encroachments of the federal government on the authority of the state governments would not excite the opposition of a single state or a few states only. They would be signals of general alarm." In other words, everybody, every state should be very concerned if there's any types of encroachments of the federal government going beyond the boundaries and constraints that are placed upon them by the Constitution. So going on, they would be the signals of general alarm. Every government would espouse the common cause. A correspondence would be open. In other words, states would be calling for dealing with the encroachment. Now, everybody keeps on looking at the Convention of States and Article 5 Convention like that's the only type of convention there is. And I'm here to tell you that there are different types of conventions. The first convention, which everybody is really concerned with, is the Constitutional Convention. That convention, as I've said before, is the writing of a constitution. The next convention that is available, that's in the Constitution, is the Article 5 Convention or the Convention of States. There are other types of conventions, and I will just call them administrative conventions, where the states have the ability to pull together and say, hey, look at this, they're violating the Constitution and our contract. And so the states have the power to call a convention to audit the Constitution and or to literally step in and say, you're encroaching upon our powers. Here we are kind of coming up on a hard break, but let me just close on this, that there are different types of conventions. It's called the C word, and I don't want anybody to be alarmed whenever they hear the C word because you've been programmed to do so. What we are trying to do is take back this nation by using our contract, the contract of the states. All right, we're back, and we're going to run right back into the Federalist Papers, and I hope that you're not bored by this. As I've said before, the Constitution is scripture for the governance of man, and the only way you're going to understand what that scripture means and what it really says is you have to get into the details as the framers clearly defined this. They created all sorts of definitions and clarifications that harmonized with each particular component and factor of the Constitution. So, moving forward, here's a quote by Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Paper number 17. "The separate governments in a confederacy may aptly be compared with the feudal baronies, with this advantage in their favor, that from the reason already explained, they will generally possess the confidence and goodwill of the people, and with so important a support, will be able effectually to oppose all encroachments of the natural government." In other words, as he was talking about, the Confederacy will generally possess the confidence of the people. What is the Confederacy? The Confederacy, by the way, and I said this previously, that we have a hybrid constitutional republic. This hybrid constitutional republic consists of both a Confederacy and a Federacy. The federal government isn't the end-all of all governments. It was actually very constrained. So what they kept was the Confederacy as well. So the states actually independently and collectively as the Republic, or as Hamilton here is talking about the Confederacy, they have the advantage because they really possess the confidence of and the goodwill of the people. And they will be able, quoting here, will be able effectually to oppose all encroachments of the national government. What that states is that the Confederacy, whenever the federal government makes encroachments into their powers, by the goodwill of the people and by the people's support, they will be able to deal with these encroachments and violations of the contract. Another Alexander Hamilton Federalist paper, which is number 26, and Hamilton goes into stating that the independent parties in the national legislature itself, as often as the period of discussion arrived, the state legislatures, who will always be not only vigilant but suspicious and jealous guardians of the rights of the citizens against encroachments from the federal government, will constantly have their attention awake to the conduct of the national rulers and will be ready enough in anything improper appears, or if anything improper appears, to sound the alarm to the people and not only be the voice, but if necessary, the arm of their discontent. There's so many of these, but it's important that we go through all of these. And these are all saying the exact same thing in different ways. And here is Hamilton saying that the state legislatures, they're the ones that possess the power. They're the ones that are supposed to be vigilant and suspicious and jealous as the guardians of the citizens of each state and guarding those rights from the encroachments of the federal government. And they're the ones that are supposed to sound the alarm and not only be the voice, but actually the arm against the federal government in representing the discontent of the people. How many people were really happy about Obamacare? And what did the states do about it? They went into the federal jurisdiction instead of coalescing as a Republican saying, you can't do this. This is a violation of the contract. We have been inculcated, folks, into believing that the federal government and the court system is the only way to redress. And clearly, this doesn't say anything about having to go into the court system. The states have the power. It is their contract. They can take their authority that they have constitutionally over this contract and step in and say, where did we give you and delegate this power to you for you to be able to oppress us in this manner for Obamacare or for the Department of Energy or for the Department of Transportation? I'm going to get into these in more details, but I've already made 7 cases so far that in the Federalist Papers, they were clearly talking about the contract and how the states have the power of holding back and dealing with the encroachments of the federal government. But you know what? Is it only 7? No. Another one, which is by Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Paper number 31, Hamilton goes on and says, as in republic's strength is always on the side of the people, and as there are weighty reasons to induce a belief that the state governments will commonly possess most influence over them, there is a greater probability of encroachments by the members of the federal head than by the federal head upon the members. And so what he's saying there is that there's a higher probability that the members of the federal head will then be able to encroach upon the states. And he's just pointing out the obvious, that they're going to try and always do. The king, the parliament, or the body that wants to have all sovereignty wants to be able to pull in and centralize all power. It is a natural factor of political energies that people want to centralize, bring in, consolidate, and make more power. Communism is that, it is the epitome of that. When one looks at communism, it is state-ran, it's centralized, and there's just a few people that dictate policy. And when Jefferson spoke of political energies, he talked about what we instilled was a distributive energy, or what I'd like to use the term, a centrifugal energy. And I think I spoke about this before. that if you consider the centrifugal force of the politics or what the framers injected as our foundational document, the Constitution, it allowed the political energies to flow outward to local communities, to the states, to the counties, and so forth, where they weren't going to be subject to a centralized power, to a king, a monarch, or a dictatorship, or fascism and totalitarianism. Folks, we're on the path of fascism and totalitarianism because they're trying to pull in all of these powers and have been successful in doing so, all at the sake of violating the Constitution. And that's what the whole point of this program, Reclaiming the Republic, is about, is trying to get right into the details and how they can't be doing this, and not just taking my word for it, but let's talk about the framers and what they actually said and what they defined the Constitution to be, and how they said that this was a constraint on the federal government. Again, Federalist Paper number 45, James Madison. And this is talking about the state advantage as well. So Madison has already spoken twice so far about the states having the advantage. And here in Federalist Paper number 45, Madison goes on to say, the state government will have the advantage of the federal government, whether we compare them in respect to the immediate dependence of the one or the other, to the weight of personal influence which each side will possess on the powers respectively vested in them, to the predilection and probable support of the people, to the disposition and faculty of resisting and frustrating the measures of each other. He's clearly pointing out that there will be influences between the federal government and the state government. I don't think Madison realized that the federal government would become so unethical and so corrupt that they actually are buying votes. In the old days, it used to be illegal for a politician to meet people at the bar on election day and say, hey, let me buy you a drink, and then take you over to the polls and buy your vote that way. In other words, it's illegal for a politician to be able to buy votes. However, it seems like it's not illegal for them to buy your votes by using the public purse and say, I'm going to promise you more welfare. I'm going to promise you unemployment. I'm going to promise you something at the expense of everybody else. That is illegal. It's immoral. But the problem is we're letting them get away with it. Any candidate that gets up and says, we need health care. We need, as a matter of fact, a common candidate today is talking about more help for the home. They want to create a department of babysitting. And that's coming, folks, if we allow this to keep going. And as a matter of fact, I shudder to think that we will be subjugated by a new institution that is going to be entering into our home that I'm calling the Department of Babysitting, that will come from the Democratic Party, or I would like to say the Communist Party. This really isn't about politics, because we really do have a single party. But I will say this, that if we start working and understanding, getting equally informed on who the contract holders are and the stakeholders, we will be able to take this nation back, and we'll take the ownership of the Constitution. And that's the whole point of Reclaiming the Republic and this show. I'm G.R. Mobley, and I hope you stay tuned to my next show on Wednesday afternoon, 12:30 to 1. Thank you very much.